One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you? Thanks for checking us out. I know you have a lot of options out there. It means a lot to me. You can connect with the show through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and there's links to my social media accounts there as well. You can blow me up if you'd like. Man, I'm super excited about this episode. This is one of my favorite topics, and it is one that will have some people very passionately in one camp and other people very passionately in the other camp, and that's the moon landing. I tell you what, NASA, there's a lot of questions about NASA. If you dig into the origins of this organization, it is no exaggeration to say that NASA was funded, founded, and grown into existence by Nazis. It sounds preposterous when you say that right off the bat. And I know, especially these days, everybody's a Nazi. This guy's a Nazi. But I mean literally Nazis. During Operation Paperclip, which was post-World War II, it was the, you know, the accumulation of scientists from the German side after World War II. The United States took a ton of them, forged their papers, made it look like they weren't war criminals or weren't members of the SS or weren't involved in the Nazi Party, which of course they all were, but we faked it. So we said, hey, look, we're just importing, you know, doctors that were being held against their will, or they were doctors that were working on making medicines and things like that. You know, this is, of course, nonsense. They were Nazis. That's what they were. You don't rise to become a famous well-respected scientist in Germany in the late 30s and early 1940s without being a fucking Nazi. I mean, let's just stop this lie that somehow these guys were just caught up in it all. No, they were not. You don't, you know, you have to be way into that sort of belief system to become, you know, Wernher von Braun, who was a gigantic, well-known, well-respected rocket designer. He invented and created the V1, which was kind of like an unguided missile, and then he took it the next step with the V2, which had a much more sophisticated guidance system on it. And they were launching these missiles into Europe, or I mean, out of Europe and into London and surrounding areas. There, it was devastating. In fact, had they been a year or so advanced in their missile technology, this could have been a pivotal point in turning over the war. But you know, the timing didn't work out right, and so anyway, these scientists were close, but they didn't have it all figured out. And when the war ended, they really had two choices. They could either get gobbled up by the Russians, or they could come to the United States. I don't know that the scientists necessarily had a choice, but I mean, there were two options for them, and one of them probably wasn't going to be very good, and one of them, you know, would relocate them to places like Pasadena, where they would launch a jet propulsion laboratory, and Houston, and of course the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. So NASA came about because of the Nazi Party and the brain power behind that. So it's not exactly the best start for an organization. I think we can all agree on that. That when the basis of your organization is founded by high level members of the Nazi Party, you're not exactly off to a great start as far as like integrity and forthrightness and you know, full disclosure of what you're working on and everything. And so, you know, it's not for nothing that they call NASA never a straight answer or not a single astronaut, because NASA has taken their reputation. You know, they suck up a ton of money, and I always kind of grew, I grew up liking NASA, or liking the idea, you know, of the space race and all this stuff. Man, it's cool to be a part of this and to be alive. And I wasn't alive when they landed on the moon, allegedly. But, you know, to be a human being and have somebody from the human race make it to another celestial body like the moon it's the greatest achievement in human history. It's the greatest thing that we as a people, from a technological standpoint, have ever done. But there are a lot of questions about whether or not those landings actually happened. And it's a shame, because I really want to believe it. I'm named after Charlie Duke, one of the astronauts. I have a signed picture of Charlie Duke on the moon, I guess. I guess it's him. I think it's him on the moon, but it's signed and it says something like, "May your life be as exciting as mine." And I look at that and I go, "Oh, that's cool, you know, but is this all just a gigantic scam?" And I know that a lot of people think, well, if it was a scam, everybody would have to be on it. Well, that's not true. I think when we understand compartmentalization, that's not true at all. We understand that, that if you've got people at the top that are giving the orders to people beneath them, and you're in a structure that's set up, you know, with a military background like NASA is, then there's not a whole lot of questioning of orders, and you're sort of in a need to know situation where you don't need to know what the right hand is doing if you're the left hand. You just do your job and you don't worry about theirs. So it is possible. It is possible to have an operation going on, a major operation that's going on, and still nobody know exactly what they're doing. Now, how do I know that? I'll tell you, I know this from firsthand experience with my family. My grandfather, during World War II, they lived in East Tennessee, and he worked for a company called Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. And TVA was working with Oak Ridge, and Oak Ridge is a laboratory right there in East Tennessee. And my grandfather was working there on a project, and his job was, you know, to make the uranium go one direction or something like that. I mean, I don't even know exactly what it was, but it was just, he had a task and he was working on doing that task. And the implications of what he was working on was never made public to him. He didn't know what he was working on. He just knew that he was doing a task. And it wasn't until everybody showed up one day and everything was gone and they didn't really know what had happened. And then a couple of days later, it was explained to them, congratulations, you helped us win the war. You guys were working on the atomic bomb. And he felt horrible. He was not in that camp of people that felt like, great, let's kill those Japs and everything. You know, he didn't feel that way. And he felt really deceived for not knowing what he was working on. So you can compartmentalize these large projects. They do it all the time. It happens. I'm sure it happens. It doesn't just happen in the military. It happens in, you know, an organization like NASA. It happens in big business that doesn't necessarily have to have anything secretive to do with it. I mean, do your job. Shut up. Don't ask questions. I mean, it depends on which organization you work for, but if it has some sort of government's, you know, tint to it, you're never getting the straight answer, right? You're always just kind of working on a little project, or maybe they tell you the truth every now and then, but on something major like this, like a NASA moon project, they can also, you know, it's not unreasonable to keep things a secret, because during this time they're having a race to the moon against the Russians. So to keep things under wraps is logical given those circumstances. When you're working on something secret, it is reasonable to keep things under wraps. So when people say, well, they can't keep a secret this big, they can. And they did, and they do to this day. So, you know, let's not fool ourselves. Just because, you know, Marge at the copy machine is got her nose in everybody's business at your workplace, it doesn't mean that shit flies when you work at NASA, you know, because there's a chain of command and you can get yourself in a situation where you are told to mind your own business. And I would imagine that's what happened in the case of the moon landing. Or the alleged moon landing, or whatever you want to, however you want to think of it. Now, I grew up as somebody that always believed we went to the moon. I really didn't have any reason to doubt it. I saw the pictures. I saw the video. I saw the astronauts talking about it. I saw all that stuff. So I was a believer. And I liked it, by the way. I like the idea that we went to the moon. I like the idea that we went to the moon as Americans. That's pretty cool. On top of that, I'm not a big rah-rah America guy, but I am an American. And so it was kind of nice. And I thought it sent a signal, you know, of like hope and you know, achievement and endless possibilities to the people of the world. It's a good, everything about it's pretty good. But I have to admit that I came into this an understanding that we were not told the truth about the moon landing, kicking and screaming. I don't want to believe that it was a gigantic scam. I really don't. But I can't come to any other conclusion than that. And I'm going to go through some information about the moon landing, and I'll let you decide. Because like I said, this is the one conspiracy that I want to believe. everything about it is a positive. So I am predisposed to want this to be true. But if I'm being intellectually honest about it, I have to admit that there are some major problems with the story. There's some major problems with the current version of reality at NASA that deeply contradicts their moon landing stories. It's not even me saying it. It's their own guys within their own organization are starting to say things that contradict the official story. And some incidents have happened at NASA that you just have to ask the question, you know, what is really going on here? It's not unpatriotic to question this. I know a lot of people are very attached to this, to the moon landing story. A lot of Americans are very attached to it. And I understand, and I get it. And I was for a long time. I don't like that I changed my opinion on this. I really don't. It works much better for me if I loved it, if I believed that we went. But I don't. And I know that some people may say, well, you just, you know, everything's, when you're into these sorts of topics, everything's a conspiracy. I get that. I understand. But this one's sloppy. And there's a lot of problems with the official story. A lot of problems with the official story. And I think that you, when I go through this list of some of the things that have happened, some of the things that have been said, if you're still in the camp of we went to the moon, this will at the very least cause you to re-examine it. And look, I don't know. I don't know what we even get out of this, except just another example of the government lying to us, you know? And if you're somebody that says like, I just don't fuck with this one thing that I really like and believe, I get it, man. I totally understand because I was in that camp for a long, long time. It's just like, I understand 9/11 is an inside job and I understand that these wars are kicked off by false flags, but can you just let me have the moon landing? Because I really like the idea that we went there and it all sounds really, you know, neat and like all the possibilities are endless. But well, let's just get into this because, you know, this is the original conspiracy theory. It really is. And that this landing has been shrouded in mystery for the better part of, you know, half a century. And there's a, you know, it's, I don't know that it's necessarily split down the middle, but it is one of those things, even within the alternative media or the people that are into conspiracy theories, it's still a good debate. You know, I don't think anybody is saying, you know, is saying, in the alternative media is saying 9/11 happened by 19 Arab hijackers. I think we're all pretty much, aware that that is a total lie. But when it comes to the moon landing, there's still people, you know, on either side. And maybe some of it, and it's interesting because it connects to the UFO question. And then that connects to the secret space program question, which I'm really into, by the way. Like I really think it's fascinating that the concept of a secret space program. But I wind up with a bit of cognitive dissonance because I feel like on the one hand, I don't think that we went to the moon, but on the other hand, I feel like maybe there is a secret space program, and that those two things are kind of contradictory. And so bear with me as we work this thing out. But I think it's important to realize that in 2006, NASA admitted that they could not locate the authentic video copy of the July 20th, 1969 moon landing. The historical recording was part of 200,000 tapes. You know, back then they had to record it to tapes instead of the technology that we have now. So they had these big rolls, these big reels of tape. And these authentic, you know, the tape of this event, 200,000 tapes were magnetically erased and reused by NASA in order to save money. according to Dick Nafsker, an engineer at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. He says, I don't think anyone in the NASA organization did anything wrong. It slipped through the cracks and nobody's happy about it. You don't think anybody did anything wrong? They went and erased and recorded over the most important event in human history and nobody did anything wrong? And we're not happy about it? I want you to be objective about this for a second. Are we painting over the Mona Lisa? Because this is what they're asking us to believe. That we took the tapes of the most important event in the history of human beings and we recorded over it to save money. NASA gets $53 million a day. What are they, shopping at Marshall's and clipping coupons? Now, I mean, this is such an insulting lie that it starts this process with a lot of people of saying, okay, if this is your official story for this, then we have to examine every story you've ever told us because this is certified grade A dog shit. That's what this story is. NASA is announcing to the world that the tape recording of the most important moment in mankind was taking up too much space in their archive tape room, so they decided to record over it to save money. Well, let's just keep going. Stan Lebar, the designer of the lunar video camera used by Neil Armstrong and the astronauts on the moon, he said, "So I don't believe that the tapes exist today at all. It was a hard thing to accept, but there is just an overwhelming amount of evidence that led us to believe that they just don't exist anymore, and you have to accept reality." No. You know what? Actually, we don't have to accept reality. This isn't reality anyway. It's bullshit. So now we've got another guy from NASA that is talking about how the tapes don't exist anymore. What about the reels and reels of telemetry data from the launch of the Apollo rockets? It seems like there would be a ton of important information there to be examined, right? I mean, nope. NASA says those tapes got lost too. What about the master copy original footage of the moon landing? Could we see the actual tapes so that we can verify their authenticity? Not the crappy black and white tape of a tape that was shown to the world, but the actual footage. Nope. They don't have them. In fact, you know what most people don't realize is that the footage that you saw on the on your TV was actually from a 16 millimeter video camera that was pointed at a television screen inside the Johnson Space Center. So it was a 16 millimeter video recording of a television screen showing the footage. It was a recording of a recording. Think about that for a second. They weren't piping in the feed straight out to the television. The feed was going in to a television. I mean, it wasn't going out to televisions around the world. It was going into one television at the Kennedy Space Center. And then in front of that television, they had wheeled up a camera to take a video of the television playing the show. It'd be like if you took your cell phone camera and walked up to your TV and recorded a show by just pointing your cell phone camera at the TV and recording it and saying, "Oh, I've got the the nightly news." You film the nightly news by doing that. It would be a degraded version of it. So why would you do that? Why did NASA do that? They did. They did it that way. I mean, they've always been shady. I mean, NASA's been shady. If nothing else, there's major questions about what they do with the money that they get. But, you know, in this case, first they said they lost the film. But then when they were pressed for an explanation, they changed their story and said that the tapes were recorded over. An agency that has literally, you know, that has siphoned off trillions of dollars is now, for some reason, budget conscious. They decided to reuse the tapes of the moon landing. And what, that's not a problem? This is such an insulting lie. And they are acting like a nervous husband being brought down to the police station to be asked a few questions about his wife's sudden disappearance and the $3 trillion life insurance policy that they just happened to take out a month earlier. They're acting suspiciously. Their answers don't make sense. Buzz Aldrin, it's real easy to manufacture what you think the people want to hear, but that's not very honest. Do you think it's... So let me ask you a question. Do you think that NASA actually erased those tapes? Or do you think it's more likely that perhaps they didn't want people taking a closer look at their film footage from their trips to the moon with today's computing and imaging technology? I mean, advances in technology for creating and manipulating video have improved exponentially over the last 50 years. And their moon landing tapes would be able to be analyzed in a way that NASA probably never expected. And if NASA learned anything from the O.J. Simpson trial 20 plus years ago, it was to never let the other side handle the evidence. So, NASA promotion video says this: the next generation spacecraft will enable America to explore beyond low Earth orbit. That'd be great if we could explore beyond low Earth orbit, you know, except for those 7 trips that we took to the moon 50 years ago. Why is NASA's new promotional video saying that the next generation spacecraft will enable America to explore beyond low Earth orbit? Didn't we explore beyond low Earth orbit 50 years ago? What's the next generation going to do? Did the Apollo missions actually go to the moon in 1969 in the equivalent of a Volkswagen Beetle? Could they actually fly and land on the moon in a spaceship that had the computing power that today we would find in a handheld calculator? Were they able to go through the Van Allen radiation belts? Well, let's hear what Kelly Smith has to say about this. NASA engineer, and he's discussing the upcoming Orion mission. This is in 2014, he said. As we get further away from Earth, we'll pass through the Van Allen radiation belts, an area of dangerous radiation. Radiation like this can harden the guidance system, onboard computers, and other electronics on Orion. Naturally, we have to pass through this danger zone twice, once up and once back. But Orion has protection. Shielding will be put to the test as the vehicle cuts through waves of radiation. Sensors aboard will record radiation levels for scientists to study. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space. Hey, Kelly, quick question if you don't mind. Didn't we already send people through this region of space dozens of times? From 1969 to 1972 when they went to the moon on the Apollo missions? What do you mean we need to solve these challenges before sending people through this region of space? I'm a bit confused. Colonel Terry Virts, International Space Station commander, during an interview while inside the International Space Station. Right now we can fly in low Earth orbit. That's the farthest we can go. Well, there's a problem, because low Earth orbit is not quite far enough to get you to the moon. low Earth orbit is, I think, 400 miles up, anywhere up to 400 miles. The moon is allegedly 237,000 miles from Earth. So what are we talking about here? Why did the people at NASA keep saying we've got to figure out these problems before we go out of low Earth orbit, or before we go through the Van Allen radiation belt, which extends from 1,000 miles outside of Earth to 25,000 miles outside of Earth? It's one of those, it's like a magnetic shield around the planet. Astronaut Kate Rubins during an interview while inside the International Space Station. The kinds of technologies that we are testing out on the space station are definitely helping us with our goals of going beyond low Earth orbit. So once again, why is it a goal to go beyond low Earth orbit if you've already gone beyond low Earth orbit 14 times? 7 to the moon and 7 back. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. DeleteMe has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, DeleteMe is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment's only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And Cash Advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with Cash Advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with Cash Advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. If you've watched the press conferences once Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins, and Neil Armstrong returned from the moon, one thing stands out at you. I mean, it just jumps out when you see this press conference. And I'll paint the picture for you. The press conference is the three of them. You've got Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and Michael Collins. They're sitting next to one another at a table. And it's just the three of them. And there's an audience, or well, there's a media audience, and there's cameras pointed at them. And this is their they're just being interviewed after they've come back, and they look like hostages. There is not a single smile. Their jaws are clenched. They're sitting there with their hands folded together, and they look like Neil Armstrong looks like he wants to throw up during the whole thing. And I know that doesn't mean anything. I acknowledge that this is circumstantial, but it is it's an unrealistic, it's an unnatural reaction to having achieved the greatest moment in human history, coming back to the planet and finally getting a chance to tell the world what you saw and what you did. And these guys look like they want to be anywhere else but there. I mean, looks like, I mean, I feel like if they had pulled the camera back a bit, you would have seen guys with guns standing behind their heads. You know what I mean? The only way I can think to describe it is they look like hostages. Like being forced to make one of those hostage videos where you're like, please give them whatever they ask for. Let us go. We are scared. You know, it's incongruent with how you would behave when you came back from something like this. And then add into the fact that Neil Armstrong did like two interviews over the next 50 years. All of them became tremendous alcoholics. Michael Collins hid from everybody. Neil Armstrong hid from everybody. The only one that went out there and felt comfortable talking is Buzz Aldrin, but he was fucked up half the time, you know? The unlikable Bryant Gumbel conducted an interview with Michael Collins on the 25th anniversary of the moon landing. And he said, Mike Collins, but for a day, how often are you reminded of your achievement? Michael Collins' response was, well, if I go out back and look up in the sky and see the moon, either I can remember where I was 20 years ago, or I can pretend I've never been there. It works for me either way. Huh? What kind of weird answer is that? I mean, even Donald Rumsfeld probably thinks this is a crazy answer. You can remember where I was 20 years ago, or you can pretend that you've never been there? How is that an answer to what it's like to be one of the astronauts that went to the moon? What are you talking about? You can pretend like you've never been there. Have you never been there? Now, I know that people will say, if these guys had never gone, surely they would have said something to somebody before. Well, the answer is not necessarily, and don't call me Shirley, but let me explain how this can work. I'm not saying that this is how it works in this particular situation, but this is how it works in similar situations. Somebody explains to these guys before they go to the moon. They say, you know, this is what we're doing. This is the situation that we're pulling off here. We're not really going. We're going to make it look like we went. You guys, all military guys, all Freemasons, by the way, you guys have been chosen for this job because of your extraordinary ability to follow orders and keep your mouth shut. And we expect you to do the same. But we would be remiss if we didn't explain to you in great detail the consequences of your actions, should you decide to talk about this ever for the rest of your life. Here's what will happen, Neil Armstrong. We will take your wife and kids and put them in a blender and make it look like you did it. Michael Collins, you and your entire family will die in a car accident. And this car accident will catch on fire and everybody in it will burn to a crisp, including you. Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin, you have a similar fate. These guys are all in the military. They understand how this stuff works. They understand that something like that wouldn't be an idle threat. You know, we'll do to you what we did to Robert Carradine. Hang your ass in a rubber bondage suit in a closet. Tell everyone you died jerking off. You know what I mean? So not only will you be dead, but we'll tarnish your reputation as well. These are serious people that would just tell them, listen, we'll kill your entire family if you ever say anything about it. And they have to know that these people are serious. They would have to understand the level of deception that was happening. And they would have to know that they are dealing with some very serious people that have a vested interest in keeping this story going. So there are ways to make people keep their mouth shut. And as far as the audacity of the lie, you need look no further than Adolf Hitler, who said, make the lie big, make it simple, keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it. We know. We know this. We know that this is how it works. 60 Minutes reporter Ed Bradley said to Neil Armstrong, you sometimes seem uncomfortable with your celebrity, that you'd rather not have all this attention. And Neil Armstrong's response is, no, I just don't deserve it. It's difficult to tell if this is humility or guilt. We've got pictures or problems with the pictures that they took on the moon. Because, you know, if you just take your iPhone out or your camera phone or whatever, and you shoot a bunch of pictures of things during the course of a day, you're going to get some blurry ones. You know what's interesting about the NASA pictures? They all came out perfect. Did a hell of a job. That's Stan Lebar, man. He created a great camera, didn't he? Every picture seems to come out perfectly centered and not blurry or anything like that. Even though the viewfinder, they couldn't put, the camera was mounted to the chest of Buzz Aldrin. So it wasn't like you could look through a viewfinder. You didn't hold it up to in front of your face and aim it like you aimed it with your chest. Whatever direction you were looking, that's what you shot. So you're talking about basically essentially not having a viewfinder, just kind of winging it and guessing it. And I'll tell you, those pictures came out really good for somebody that was just winging it. Not to mention, they took so many pictures on that moon trip. I think the math works out to they would have to have taken a picture every 4 seconds, I think, even during the time when they were supposed to, you know, be sleeping or, you know, not, you know, in the capsule and not outside. The math on the photographs don't add up. You've got problems with the backgrounds, several backgrounds being exactly the same, which of course starts to drag people into, was this front screen projection? And people that understand Stanley Kubrick's work will know that he pioneered front screen projection. Did a great job with it. And the signatures of front screen projection are all over the photographs from the moon. They're everywhere. And the videos too. And it has to do with the horizon line. And how you never fully see the horizon line. There's always something kind of blocking aspects of the horizon line. There's problems with the size of the Earth that is shown in the pictures. There's problems with, when you examine the pictures, there's problems with photoshopping showing up in it. There's problems with the lighting sources, where you have light coming from two different directions, which is impossible when you're on the moon, because those cameras didn't have a flash. So you've got no flash for your camera. You are on the moon with a source of light that is coming from the sun, which you don't have the benefit of an atmosphere to diffuse that. So you're playing with hardcore shadows. You've also got the technical, like the scientific component of it, which is that when you're standing in the sun, you're in 200 degree temperatures. And when you're in the shade, you're in negative 200 degree temperatures. So you've got a 400 degree swing based on where you're standing. There's a lot of science behind this that doesn't quite add up. There's a lot of photography tricks or questions about the photography of it that don't add up. You have professional photographers coming out and saying, hey, this doesn't work for me. These angles are all wrong. The lighting is all wrong. There's two sources of light. that which shouldn't happen. They didn't drag, you know, light boxes out there or anything like that. You know, there's questions about the flag is moving. I'm less hung up on that, because I think that if you made the flag so that you're trying to get it to stand up, it might have the tendency to not stay in that shape and might, you know, move. But I don't know. I mean, it's something to consider, but it wasn't one of those things that really jumped out at me as being a real indicator, because I think there's some reasons why that flag could have been moving. But when the capsule takes off to go connect up, or when the lander takes off to connect with the capsule that's circling, and they have the timing of the camera to pan up at the same time that thing's taken, they did a pretty good job with that. I got problems with a funny thing happened on the way to the moon, that documentary, which points out some undeniable video manipulation that's going on, where they're shooting Earth when they darken the cabin in the capsule and shoot from the back end all the way through the front end through a window. And they put a stencil in the window to simulate the Terminator line of the Earth to give it a roundness to it, which makes it look like you're farther away from the Earth than you are. And in that same video shot, you see the lights come back on and they pull that thing away from the window. And then you can see that the window is filled with the Earth, meaning that they're in low Earth orbit. They're not halfway to the moon as they claim to be. You've got to watch that video. A funny thing happened on the way to the moon. It is, boy, man, it's tough. It's tough to explain. And when he confronts Neil Armstrong on it, when he confronts Buzz Aldrin on it, he gets thrown out of his house and later gets punched in the face. So we've got some problems with their story not adding up. There's questions about the lunar rover, the dune buggy that's driving around. There's questions about them hopping. And when you speed that up, when you speed it up to 2 times the speed, then it looks like you're just hopping normally. But when you slow it down to 1 time the speed, you know, the event that we were shown of them sort of bouncing and then bouncing and then bouncing, you're like, oh shit, they're in, you know, a place with 1/7 the gravitation of the Earth. Look at how they're hopping. Well, when you turn that to 2 times the speed, which is, then it looks normal. It looks like a normal bouncing, bounce, 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 bounce. A guy in a studio bouncing around. The dust that's kicked up comes back down in a way that is consistent with Earth's gravity, but not the moon's gravity. There's a lot of flaws with this. Minor things, little things, but it becomes this mountain of like circumstantial evidence that keeps adding up. Not to mention these guys at NASA just have their story isn't very good. It's not very solid. And they keep talking about how they've got to solve these problems before they do X, Y, and Z. Well, if we've already gone to the moon, then by default, we have solved all these problems because these guys have all gone there and come back. So why do we have to solve the shielding problems on Orion to prevent, you know, to allow them to go through the Van Allen radiation belt if they've already gone through the Van Allen radiation belt? You can't have it both ways. You can't tell people that we need money for this so we can solve these problems while also telling them, oh yeah, we already solved those problems 50 years ago. And let me ask you this. This is a very logical question. What technology can you think of that has dropped off, just fallen off a cliff after we've invented it? Airplanes? The Wright brothers, right? They invented, you know, flying an airplane and got, you know, a little bit off the ground. And within 10 years of that, technology had advanced rapidly and people were flying all over the world. Telephones. Telegraph. The technology gets better and better and better and better, and we improve upon it. Why is it that we went to the moon 50 years ago, but we can't go now? Why is it that we have to solve these problems before we get out of Earth orbit, but we've allegedly already done them 50 years ago? Why is the technology destroyed? Why do we not have the technology to go back to the moon? I mean, I think these are reasonable questions. And the people that are, you know, involved in this currently are talking about going to Mars. We want to go to Mars. We got to go to Mars. After the Mars Curiosity rover landed on Mars, NASA held a press conference at JPL in Pasadena where the project leaders were all sitting on a big stage and the audience was comprised of members of the press. And so they had questions, you know, obviously this great achievement. They had questions. So they ask Adam Stelzner, who was the head of this project, the lead engineer of the Mars project. This reporter says to him, and the reason why I'm talking about the Mars thing now, as opposed, you know, to the moon, is that what's currently happening with the Mars program and a bunch of people in charge of it that don't know what's actually going on, it just goes to show NASA's lack of credibility, which is the reason why I'm bringing this up. So the reporter asked Adam Stelzner, can you tell us about the image file type and compression that was used to send this very important couple of thumbnails back from Mars? His response, yes, unfortunately, I absolutely cannot. Laughs from the audience. If Justin Mackey is in the room, points into the audience, or there are a couple of other people on the team who would be able to whip that out quickly, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Sorry. The whole purpose of this Curiosity rover mission to Mars is to send back images from the Martian surface. And the guy in charge of all of it doesn't know what format the images are in. It is impossible for him to not know the answer to that question. It seems to be a very common theme with this guy because he doesn't know anything about anything. He'd be great in the mafia, though. So another media member named Greg says, Adam, tell us about the landing. Adam says, all right, Greg, I can't tell you too much about it. I mean, it looks good. I'm being a little flip. In short, it looked extremely clean. We touched down in conditions that were more on the benign side of our nominal expectation. It looks good. That's the answer. You don't need to give the short version. Where does anyone in this room have to be? But right there, talking about the biggest achievement of their lives, landing this rover on Mars. If ever there was a place to give the long version, it would be right then. But Adam Stelzner decides to go with, in short, it looked extremely clean. No, no, no. Give us the long answer. Give us any answer. So here's more of Adam Stelzner's non-answers to questions that he was asked about that project that he is in charge of on that day. These are some of his answers. I'm not going to read the questions, but I'm just going to give you his answers. And you tell me if this guy's being evasive and vague, or he just doesn't know anything about this. Very nominal, remarkably good. Our navigation error was on the low side of our expectations. Partly by my good friend Miguel San Martin, who is somewhere out there pointing in the audience again, I hope. Our powered flight appears to have been excellent. If my good friend Ben Toma is in the house, again pointing to the audience, is Ben in the house? It looked like, with my eyeball, that we landed on a nice flat spot. And then you've got Leo, this guy, a member of the media named Leo Enright. And he says, Leo Enright from RTE Irish Television, the coordinates of the landing that go down to something like 5 decimal points. I just wanted to confirm with you that you do have those sort of coordinates. And am I reading those coordinates correctly when I see that it looks as though you've landed within 500 meters of the skirt around the mountains? I mean, you are really close to the mountain on the closer end of the landing ellipse and possibly within striking distance of the phyllosilica trench. Adam Stalzer's response, I can't confirm that. My estimate, I'm looking for somebody. There is somebody here in the audience that has that on the tip of their noggin. We should have that. We should soon have that estimate. How great would it have been if his answer was, I didn't realize there was going to be math at this press conference. Another media member asked him this. I may be imagining this, but the one time during the landing the temperature seemed to drop in the room was when Adam asked for OD-278, and they said, no, we only have 277. What was happening, or was it anything of significance? Adam Stalzer's response, no. Long pause followed by audience laughter. With our simulation tool based on those ODs, and so I had seen the ODs at 228 come up, and I was asking if they had that because I had that and they didn't have it over there yet, and yeah. You know, Adam Stalzer would probably be good on the television game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, as long as he could phone a friend or ask the audience. Otherwise, this dude is totally useless. I mean, if you're wondering, if you know Adam Stelzner and you're wondering what to get him for a birthday present, I hear that thesauruses are good. Look, if NASA is really sending rovers from Earth to another planet, there is one thing that is crystal clear. Adam Stelzner is not in charge of it. It doesn't prove anything, of course, once again. It doesn't prove that they didn't send this rover to Mars. It just proves that the people at NASA that are in charge of these projects, they don't seem to know much about them. They don't seem to be able to give anybody a straight answer. And they always need more money. I think kind of a fitting story about how we see NASA and how other countries see NASA would be this one. In 2009, the Dutch National Museum said that one of its prized possessions, a rock supposedly brought back from the moon by United States astronauts, is just a piece of petrified wood. The moon rock was given to then U.S. Ambassador William Middendorf during a visit by three Apollo astronauts back in 1969. And the spokeswoman who oversaw the investigation that proved the piece was fake said the museum will keep it anyway as a curiosity. Quote, it's a good story with some questions that are still unanswered. We can laugh about it. NASA was handing out fake moon rocks. How absolutely fitting. So, you know, I don't trust NASA at all, but I'm fascinated by the concept that maybe, you know, that we've recovered extraterrestrial technology and have reverse engineered it. I don't know if we have. I just think it's interesting. I know that the Roswell thing came out in 1947, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of theories about that. And maybe it was, maybe it was something authentically from another planet. Maybe it was Nazi technology that they were testing. Maybe it's a psychological operation. Who knows? You know, just, there's a lot to that. But one thing that you've heard is that the idea that we have suppressed technology, that we are currently in possession of technology that has been reverse engineered, that has come from crashed UFOs that have landed, UFOs that have landed or that have crashed, and we have taken this technology back to the laboratory, reverse engineered to see how it works, and then we are currently using this technology. So you can get into the Bob Lazar component of this, working at Los Alamos, and he was brought in to, work on this propulsion component of the ship, and you can believe that or not believe it. I don't know. I mean, I'm I think Bob Lazar's story checks out, to be honest with you, because, you know, he the idea that they erased him from MIT is reasonable, actually. I mean, if you know how these things work, I mean, that's not, people say, oh, well, if the records were there, if he really went there, the records would be there. Well, not necessarily. They can make you disappear. They also tried to say he never worked at Los Alamos, but they dug up phone directories that had, that showed his name in there and even a picture of him. And he did work at Los Alamos. Now, did he reverse engineer this technology? I don't know. It's hard to say, though, you know. The world of black projects causes people to speculate about exactly what has been created, but mostly because the disinformation campaign is so prevalent. So every now and then you get lucky and something slips out. But even then, the possibility of disinformation designed to look like a slip up is always there. There was a time when knowledge of these projects wasn't really a concern to those wishing to keep the projects hidden, in part because the flow of information outwards was really not that heavy. But the internet now provides an avenue for more information to be available to the masses. But of course, that also provides the parallel disinformation campaign to be ramped up as well. So we have to take that into consideration. People always wonder how secrets that are so big can actually be kept secret for so long. Before someone makes the transition into a top secret program, they get a quick explanation of the rules and the repercussions should they decide to talk. You know, it probably isn't much of a conversation, really. It's more like, by the way, if you ever mention this to anyone, we'll kill your entire family and make it look like you did it. You know, so it's that kind of conversation. But every now and then you get a little tidbit, a little something. And this reminds me of a story that Jan Harzen told, and he is he's the national director of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, I think, which, you know, you can take it or leave it, whether that's a disinformation campaign or not. It could very well be, or a combination of some. But at the time of this story, the story that he tells takes place back in 1993 at UCLA in Los Angeles. And at the time he wasn't, the international director of MUFON. He was just like an engineer. And a guy named Ben Rich was there and he was giving a speech. Now, Ben Rich was the former CEO of Lockheed's ultra secret Skunk Works. And, he said during this presentation, we have the technology to take ET home, which is kind of a big statement. If you understand, first of all, if you understand Lockheed Martin, and they jokingly refer to Lockheed Martin as the United States of Lockheed Martin, because it is so powerful that it is almost its own entity in and of itself. And then the Skunk Works component of that, which is the secret version of Lockheed Martin, you can only imagine what they're working on. And Ben Rich was the CEO of Skunk Works. So from 1975 through 1991. So if anyone would know, it would be him. So after this presentation, Jan Harzen follows Ben Rich out to the parking lot. And there's a couple other attendees there. One lady, you know, is asking about the technology to take ET home, but Ben Rich kind of ignored the question. But after, you know, after a while, he starts to engage with some of the people that followed him out to the parking lot. So Ben Rich says, "Do you think it's possible to travel to the stars?" And an unnamed engineer said, "I don't know. It would just take a long time to get there." And Ben Rich's response was, "We found an error in the equations, and we now know how to travel to the stars, and it won't take us a lifetime to do it." Okay. So Jan Harzen says that Ben Rich didn't say what equations he was referring to, but Harzen assumed that they were, what he was talking about was known as Maxwell's equation. However, he admits that this is just an educated guess. Rich excused himself and began walking away. And Harzin called out to Rich and said, I want to ask you one last question. And he said, this is Jan Harzin talking now. He said, I have a real interest in the propulsion you are talking about that gets us to the stars. Can you tell me how it works? And Ben Rich says, do you know how ESP works? And Jan Harzin's response was, I don't know. All points in space and time are connected. And Ben Rich turns to him and says, that's how it works. He walked away and wound up passing away a couple years later. So look, there's questions about this. NASA's sketchy. I'd like to believe them, I just can't. And you've got guys from Lockheed Martin Skunk Works talking about how they found errors in the equation and they know how to travel to the stars. And then you hear reports of spaceships called TR-3Bs. And then you hear Gary McKinnon talk about finding a list of non-terrestrial officers and ship-to-ship transfers in the USSS Roscoe Hillenkoetter, United States spaceship, and that it's managed by the Navy, and all of these things. What's out there? What's the truth? Have we gone to the moon? Did we go to the moon in a rickety tin can? I don't think we did. Are we going to the moon now in TR-3Bs? I think we might be. Remember when I said I hold contradictory beliefs about this? This is what I'm talking about. It's a fascinating topic. It's a great debate. It's interesting to think about these things. I want to know. I'm not going to do anything about it, but I just want to know. I just want to know how it all works. I want to know what technology we have. I don't expect to know it. I think these things are probably very well hidden. But I geek out on this stuff. I really find it fascinating. I want to know what's going on with our space program. I don't believe guys like Corey Good. I'll tell you that. And David Wilcock. I think those guys are totally full of shit. And not, you know, 20 and back programs. And I'm going to need something. I'm going to need a little bit more proof. I understand that the Jan Harzin conversation is not proof of that. But I also realize that NASA's explanation of destroying all the telemetry data, all the magnetic tapes, that's an answer that does not work for me. That is not a true story. That's not what really happened. So they say they recorded over it. I don't believe that. I believe they just don't want people to re-examine the tape with the current technology because I think they faked it. And I take no pleasure in saying that because I really enjoy the lie. But I just can't believe it anymore. So tell me what you think. And share this show with people. Can't count on the algorithms to do it. They hate us. But luckily you guys don't hate us. And so I really do appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Get the word out. Take care, everybody.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.